This first question is from Angela from Singapore. Dear Long Pa, my mom is very unwell with cancer spreading to liver and bones. She cannot eat, sleep, or walk. What can I do to help? How may I dedicate merit?
So you can play some chanting for your mother, or you can chant yourself and have them listen, or play a recording. You can play a Dhamma talk for them to listen to. One Dhamma talk you can play for them is the talk, One's True Home. It's a talk from Venerable Ajahn Chah that's available, has English recordings, English translation. So you can play that for her to listen to, for her to contemplate the truth that all things are like this, that the body is like this. It might be hard and difficult, but we see that that's normal. Having been born already, it's normal for it to be that way. So therefore, you have loving kindness for your mother. You have the Dhamma of loving kindness. You take care of them in such a way that they don't lack for anything or need anything, but you help get them what they want. And then you determine your mind that all this merit and goodness, may it help my mother to have a mind that's peaceful and at ease, not agitated. Regarding the bodily health, that's the duty of the doctor to look after, to take medicine according to her symptoms. But then in terms of caring for the mind, she can listen to Dhamma. You can also speak Dhamma yourself to her, speak on things that make her feel at ease and relaxed before you play a Dhamma talk. So you can talk about good feelings that you and your mother have had together in the past, or talk about the good things that she's done for you in the past, or the ways that she's patiently endured with you or her other children in the past so that she feels at ease and relaxed. You can talk to the ways that she gave and sacrificed and cared for herself or her children. And this can help her to feel at ease, because when her children are very young, they're not able to help themselves, and so the mother does everything, helps in all ways to help the child. So you can speak about these things that can give your mother joy and happiness. And then once she feels joy and happiness, then you can play the Dhamma talk. So you bring up these topics or subjects that help her feel happy, at ease, speak on that first. And then listening to the Dhamma can get joy from that as well. And so you determine your mind that may this bring benefit to your mother. And that you help her to recollect any merit and goodness that she's done, to recollect things that are meritorious and good. And so you give help in these ways. And then when it comes to be her last day, then she can go with merit and go to a good place.
This next question is from Stephen Ross. Hello and thanks. This is a difficult question to ask because I do not mean to sound disrespectful, and it is something that distracts me more and more and is something that will change my mind if answered. We are just atoms with no sex and no self, just a collection of the elements and atoms. How can we justify creating differences between the genders? Is this not simply the patriarchy delusion towards gender, and that's something that hinders our growth in Buddhism for both male and especially females? Similarly, does giving different ranks different benefits not just encourage the ego to act up or create attachment, difficulties in finding emptiness. I want to fully integrate myself into Buddhism for better peace and stillness, but I feel over the years very human practices have surfaced. Thank you.
So we speak about this level of Dhamma, that's Paramatta, the ultimate, highest level, that's true. And so we see that these khandhas, this material form, feeling tone, perceptions, formation, sense consciousness, it's all not self. They're all equal in that way. All rupa and nama is like this. And so we see that there's no gender, there's no sex, there's no male or female, there's no laity, there's no monastics, it's all empty. And also one who practices samadhi, who brings the mind to stillness and peace, has these qualities of applied attention, sustained attention, rapture, happiness, one-pointedness, has these qualities of stillness, rapture, fullness, the mind's peaceful and equanimous. They don't have this feeling that I'm a person, I'm a being, I'm a male or female. They don't have that. It's just the peaceful, still mind. So this is the mind that's in the state of a Brahma God. There's no sex, no gender, no male or female. Because the mind has been freed of the body at that point, the mind's peaceful. But when the mind is living in the body, there's this convention of having male, female, having conventions, samuti. For instance, we see that in the world there's various countries that have different laws of those countries. And so if one goes as a tourist to visit a different country, you can't take the laws from the country you're coming from and use that or apply that in the country that you're visiting. It doesn't work that way. You have to abide or follow the laws that are there in the country that you're in. And so there's these different laws and rules like that. So we speak about Dhamma practitioners. There's different rules when you come into the Dhamma practice environment. For instance, the monastics, they have this higher platform that the monastics sit on, and the lay people sit lower down. So this is a rule that exists that is out of respect. So one can see that when there's an ordination ceremony, then the members of the monastic sangha sit close together on the platform, and it's not allowed for a lay person to come into that area where the monastics are sitting, because it's considered a special area of doing actions of the Sangha or Sangha Kama. And so it gets separated out like that. So that's in terms of convention. It's a rule that we observe. And so this is in order for the Vinaya or the monastic discipline to be followed in a way that's correct and right, for the ordination ceremony to become performed correctly and properly. And then there's different lineages of monastics, different ordination traditions that have different rules, and one goes to whatever lineage one is attracted to, then one ordains. But in whatever case, once one ordains, one must practice and train the mind to become peaceful in order to realize emptiness for oneself. This is vimutti, freedom and liberation, freedom from the conventionality, from the samutti that we use. And so there's monastics of various traditions like Mahanikai in Thailand or Mahayana. Then there's the laity, the people that are not ordained, and so on. So this is the samuti, the convention in the beginning. Then there's different rules, different ways to show respect and homage, or to show respect. And so we see that the monastics that have more seniority, that have more years as a monastic, then they should give loving kindness and give metta. And those monastics that have less seniority, they should lend ear to the teachings of the seniors. And we see that there's a rule from between when one ordains and one's fifth year as a monastic, one needs to take dependence on a teacher because one is not yet intelligent in the ways of the Dhamma and discipline, the Dhamma and Vinaya. So one takes dependence, one practices and trains to have respect and to live together in harmony with respect like this. And so one lives according to the monastic rules and discipline, they call it korwat, and one studies and lives in harmony. So in this way, the monastics all live like older and younger siblings, and the teacher is like a father. And you can say the new monks are like the children. And so there's a feeling of closeness and harmony, living according to the Dhamma and Vinaya. So the thoughts that you describe, it's not wrong to think like that. You can think like that. You can think, oh, why is it like this? Why is it not equal? Well, it's all empty, isn't it? So this is correct. But we live in the conventional world. So we have this these thoughts. We like to think about these thoughts like this, but all these thoughts, we have to put them down first. We have to train the mind first, train the mind in samadhi first. So the mind, once the mind is peaceful in samadhi, then we can contemplate this matter again, and then we're able to understand it according to various levels. Like these rules, like why do these rules exist? And what should we do? How should we understand these rules? We see if there's no rules in the beginning, all people have this sense of self already, have this clinging already. And so it would be very chaotic if there were no rules. It would be even more chaotic than it is already. And when it's like that, then one would have difficulty realizing peace. So we have this practice of virtue, of sila, of the monastic rules and regulations. And in this way, we can realize peace on the level of body and speech. And then our behavior is beautiful when we follow these rules. So if we just go straight to the ultimate level, it would be difficult. So we need to have rules and regulations. For instance, when the monastics take food, they take food according to their seniority, according to the number of years that they've been a monastic. So the one that goes to take food first, they in the past were one who took food last. So they've trained already, they've practiced patient endurance already. For instance, myself, when I lived at Wat Nong Papong in my first year as a monk, I was approximately the last monk out of the 60 monks that were there. And so there were perhaps some monks who ordained after me in my ordination ceremony, but I was close to being the last monk. when I ordained, there were 8 monks who ordained together, and so there might have been some monks behind me, but I also might have been the last monk out of all the monks. And so when we would eat food, there'd be about 59 monks in front of me, and I'd be the last. And they would give food according to one's seniority. So one respects the seniority like this. In this way, the behavior in the monastery functions beautifully. If we didn't respect the seniority, and the new monks would go sit in front, but the new monks, they don't yet have skill in terms of how to behave and how to conduct themselves. So if there's no rules like that, then it'd just be chaotic. The one might think, well, I'm a monk too, and why does it have to be like this? But we have this respect. And one might think, well, why can't we just have equal rights? If we behave that way, then it'd be a problem. Problems would arise. Problems would arise in society as well if it were like that. It wouldn't be peaceful. It wouldn't be proper or orderly, because everyone already has views and conceit already. So one might think, well, I have a higher level of education. I've studied more than this other person. Why should I respect them? So there's jitimana, there's views and conceit arising right there. And then that leads to trouble and agitation. So Venerable Ajahn Chah taught to put that down. That whatever you've achieved in the world, whatever education, status, and so on, to put that down when you go to Wat Nong Pupong, to let it go, put it down, and for everyone to follow the same rules. So if someone has studied a lot, a high level of education, but they have, they're not senior, they have very few years as a monk, then they put that down. They can't use it in that context. It's not something that you use in the monastery in that way. So one respects the seniority, the number of years as a monk. And then later, one becomes more senior. One sort of moves up in the line of seniority in the monastery. And one sees that the monks that are senior, they die. And so the monks in front die. But one isn't happy about that. One sees that the monks in front, many of them are gone. Or if they're still there, then they're close to death already. So therefore, we don't try to cultivate or make the sense of self even stronger. We try not to make the clinging even stronger than it already is. If we don't have any rules, then the new monks come, they'd just be clinging to the sense of self. And there wouldn't be respect for the seniors, because the seniors are ones that have trained already, they've practiced and endured already, they've let go already. So one with wisdom will be like this. So one trains to realize wisdom. And it's possible that someone with more seniority, they might cling, thinking, well, I have more seniority, and they might really cling to that. So it's up to the different levels of wisdom of various people. But the rules are there so that the outer conduct is beautiful. It's something we train and practice in. So in the beginning, we have this quality of virtue. We can compare it to many different kinds of flowers, many colors, shapes, and sizes. And one puts them all together in a garland, and the garland is beautiful. So therefore we have to set the heart in this way, to train the mind in peacefulness and collectedness as the primary important point, to be able to let go. Because we don't really understand about this in truth, so never mind about it, just put it down, let it go. Train the mind in peace and collectedness. And then when samadhi does arise, we'll be able to understand clearly later. So one who ordains, there's also lay people can be more skilled or more excellent in the practice than the monastics as well. Like in the Buddha time, we see that there were lay people who were very excellent and skilled in the practice with levels of attainment. And there was one particular lay person who was very skilled, and he still respected the monastics. He respected the status of the monastics, because he had 8 precepts, but the monastics had 227. And for the monastics can have respect for the inner qualities of that lay person. Another example is Anattapindika, who realized stream entry, but he still respected the ordained Sangha. Even the ordained Sangha that had not yet realized stream entry, he would still respect them, because the Sangha has the 227 precepts. But even if the Sangha didn't have any good inner qualities, because the monastics, a monastic might know for themselves that they don't have wisdom, don't have samadhi, and they might have little parami compared to Anattapindika. So in their hearts, they can respect Anattapindika, because Anattapindika would be Sangha in truth, and they would know that they themselves have not yet realized that, and so they would have effort in the practice. It's not that the monastic thinks, well, I'm a monastic, so I'm better. It's not like that. So we see that regarding this issue, we have to have wisdom. So we don't ordain for the sake of separating out, to have a bigger sense of self, to have more clinging, to have more status. This is convention. This is the rules of conventionality. And so one trains in wisdom. One can't cling to these things. So the doubts that you describe, just never mind about it. Just put it down. Take this answer that I'm giving today and contemplate it, and really set your heart on the practice, and this can give rise to value and benefit for you. So may you have effort and perseverance in your practice. May you set your hearts on it. Then you bring your mind to peace, collectedness, and stillness. Bring it to emptiness, and then you'll be able to understand this answer more clearly.